This is the Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage show by Mark Helm. Nothing Mark shares with you guarantees your success in the self-storage business. This is for informational purposes only. There are no calls to action, and nothing said or implied is a call for investment money into self-storage or any other asset class. You are responsible for your success in the self-storage business or any endeavor in life. Enjoy the show, and here is Mark Helm.
Well, here I am, episode 500. Took me about 545, 550 weeks or so to get here, but we're here at episode 500. My name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Quick Start Academy, which houses a lot of the training that I offer, like the 500 episodes here, as well as the courses that are virtual, online, you can take anytime, and they're there to support the small investor who wants to get into self-storage business or grow their self-storage business. And I've used this past 500 episodes to share what I've learned, experience about the self-storage industry. Basically, I learn out loud. Last week, I talked about the biggest five mistakes I think I ever made in the self-storage business. Today, I want to flip that. I want to talk about the five decisions I made that helped me create my first million in the self-storage business. Again, inside the context of creating episodes that will share out loud what I've learned. I hope this helps you. So I hope you receive value from watching these episodes. That's my intent. And I thought, what could provide more value than approaching some of the things I did right? And what I saw was that basically I made decisions that made it possible for the first million in wealth, personal wealth, from this industry to be created. I want to share what those decisions are, not what I did, but what the decisions were that were behind what I did. Interestingly enough, the decisions I'm going to share with you actually have some to do with the industry, but not a lot. Just like last week. For the most part, they were decisions I made that altered where I focused my attention. And by doing that, that made possible mining some of the wealth that this industry can offer the small investor who gets into self-storage business. So let me share those decisions with you. I've talked about this before, it's probably been a while, but the very first decision I made that altered the trajectory of my self-storage business was I got clear on what my benchmark numbers were. I made the decision to have benchmark numbers and to only do deals that fell within those benchmark numbers. Many of the people I work with start looking at deals and are looking for a good deal. In my world, that's a formula for not getting in the storage business, or worse, getting in the storage business and having problems. When I got clear on what my benchmark numbers were, I was able to grow exponentially faster. Now, what those benchmark numbers are have changed over time. They've changed based on where I am in my growth, where I am in my career, what's going on in the economy. But I always have them. And I always filter every opportunity I look at a deal through those benchmark numbers. The deal either hits it or it doesn't. It's a yes or a no. If it's a no, what needs to happen to make a yes? And does that appear to be feasible? Now, what those benchmark numbers are should be different for you than they are for me. They could be the same. But they don't have to be. Most of the time, they probably shouldn't be. For me, for example, when I got going, I was raising money. I still do. I still have partners. But I was raising money, buying facilities with other people's money. So I was real focused on what is the cash on cash return for those people and their money, and What is the internal rate of return? What is the return on this investment for that investor over the life of the loan? I was also really focused on, can I create enough value through a value add play in the first 5 years to reasonably think that I can give the, I can refinance, have a liquidity event, and give the investors their money back that they put in the deal. At that point, depending on where I was in my career, I would either keep them in the deal or buy them out. I would underwrite the deals. They either hit my benchmark cash on cash return, my benchmark internal rate of return, and it was reasonable to assume, based on the assumptions I made, which were not pie in the sky and not overly conservative, kind of right in the middle, is it reasonable to consider that I would be able to create enough equity to refinance, put a new loan on, and give the investors their money back within 5 years or less? If it was a yes, then I really dove into that opportunity and looked very close at it. If it was a no, I would look at it, see if I think it's possible. Am I within 5 or 10%? If I bought it 5 or 10% less, could the deal work? If I put more climate control in there, could the deal work? And then I would go from there. Those just happen to be my benchmark numbers. Some people I work with are really focused on how much monthly revenue is this project going to generate for me. Some people I work with, how much debt can I retire in the next 5 years, 10 years? Will there be enough cash flow made to pay the debt down so that by this date, it'll either be debt-free or very low loan-to-value? Some people I work with, it's how fast can I do my value add play? How much can I sell the project for? And what would my profit be? For the most part in my career, I've been able to stick with this decision that I made. I talked last week about one deal where I didn't. I paid for that. Now, I made the decision that before I ever looked at another deal, I was going to know what my benchmark numbers were. When I made that decision, my business transformed. It also gave me a disciplined approach to acquisition, something my partners and investors really do appreciate. Let's talk about the second decision that I made that propelled me to create the first $1 million of wealth that this industry can offer the small investor. I learned to raise money. I quickly saw that if I was only going to use my money or my money and a partner's money, that I wasn't going to own a whole lot of self-storage. And to get where I wanted to get using this asset class, it was going to take me a long time. So just like I use bank funds to leverage my returns and create a better cash on cash return, I made the decision to use other people's money to leverage my way into this industry and control more product, albeit I had a smaller ownership percent interest. Yes, I did. But by making the decision to use the leverage of other people's money, I was able to grow a portfolio exponentially faster than I could have done it on my own. Now, this isn't for everybody. I'm not saying you should do it. This was just the decision, one of the decisions I made that allowed me to do that. But just making that decision doesn't mean the money just starts showing up. I really had to learn how to figure out what investors are looking for and how to present storage opportunities in such a way that it solved the problem that they have. And two, since I didn't know many investors, I had to find partners whose sphere of influence had more higher net worth people in it than I did. So I partnered with some people who could help me run the self-storage business, who wanted to grow and create wealth in the self-storage business, and trafficked with a sphere of influence that had many more high net worth individuals than me. Then I learned how to present deals in a way that solved a problem they had, which means I've got to be able to figure out what a potential investor's problem is they're looking for a real estate investment to solve. That means I had to learn some skill sets beyond just analyzing deals and coming up with good deals. I had to learn how to get into someone else's world and see what's motivating them. What is the real driver behind their willingness to sit down with me and look at a potential deal? What's really driving them? That means, one, do research up front before I ever present the deal on who I'm presenting the deal to. And two, it means that I've got to talk less, if you can believe it, and listen more. I need to be in that person's world, see what's going on over there, not about how good I am, how good the deal is. I have to first get in their world. So, for example, because of the sphere of influence that I started growing in through my partners, there were a lot of people in that sphere of influence that I was presenting deals to that had either started a business and sold it, or they were second or third generations owners of a business that their father or grandparents had started and have sold it, usually to large national companies, and they had a lot of money. They had a lot of cash from the sale of that company. And their goal was, one, not to lose the money, and two, to beat the market, because they could have put that money in a mutual fund and made 5 to 10% doing nothing. So once I got clear, and every investor's different, but once I could get clear on what someone's goals are, what's really motivating them to consider investing, then my opportunity either helps them achieve that or it doesn't. If it doesn't, I tell them. I don't want them in the deal. They shouldn't be in this deal. It could do more damage to them, and in the long run, do more damage to me. So if my deal doesn't meet their criteria or what's driving them or why they want to be in a deal, I tell them. But storage, at least in that sphere of influence, with most of those people, really did help them solve their problem. Then I wasn't selling. I was enthusiastically showing an opportunity that could solve a problem that they had at that moment right now. What I discovered is, once a few key people invested in my deals, then their sphere of influence wanted to come in the next deal, and it went from there. And I made the decision to get as good as I possibly could at raising capital. It was the decision that made the difference. The third decision I made that had a huge impact on creating the first million of wealth from this industry was making the decision to take on construction. Now, my wife still rolls her eye when I talk about being in the construction business or overseeing construction on self-storage. In her world, what I know about construction is very little. She came from a family of electricians and tradespeople who were really good with their hands. I have problems putting a towel rack in a bathroom that will hold the weight of a wet towel. But I discovered the skill set required to take on self-storage construction doesn't necessarily mean I have to be good with a hammer, a saw, and power tools. I can partner with people who are, or I can hire people who are. I saw early on that if I was just going to buy existing self-storage and not do construction, I wasn't going to own much self-storage, and it was going to take me a long time to have the value of my assets go up to be anywhere near meet the goals I had set. So I saw clearly that I had to learn how to do construction. Expansions, conversions, all require construction. And then when I started pricing out with GCs, I saw that the cost of most general contractors, even 10, 15 years ago, were going to be prohibitive. So I made the decision to learn how to take construction on. I learned how to find partners who could help me and oversee and partner with me as we did construction. And I learned how to find construction managers who would charge a lot less than a GC. That means I had more responsibility. I was signing the contracts with the subs, but they would oversee projects on projects where I couldn't be at every day or almost every day. I learned how to know what construction numbers were. I learned how construction people talk to, interface, and manage subcontractors. I learned early on, for example, that if no one's on the site watching them, subcontractors are going to make decisions in the field that are in the subcontractor's best interest and not necessarily in the best interest of the deal or the ownership. And as the industry evolved and lenders were requiring licensed general contractors, and the owner could not, in many cases, always oversee the expansion, the conversion, or the development, I saw that I was going to have to partner with a licensed contractor. Fortunately, I know someone that is very entrepreneurial and wanted to get in the self-storage business and is credentialed in such a way that getting a license state by state is something that can be done. And so I helped him get in this, specialize in self-storage, got a piece of the ownership of that construction company, and utilized that company within my sphere of influence, like with some of you all, and on our projects. We're bringing in costs under what I would have had to pay another self-storage construction company to build for me. But I made the decision years ago that I was going to take on construction. How that looks has changed based on how the industry evolved, but it was the decision to take on the construction that created the space to make the first million and what I've made since. The fourth decision I made that had an impact on the business was the decision to build teams and to build systems. This industry tends to attract very independent, solopreneur-type mindsetted people. That worked in the 70s and 80s, maybe a little bit in the 90s. But today, no one person can have all the skill sets, have all the knowledge needed to create a great self-storage company in today's business. A couple weeks ago, I did an episode. There's a link in it, this episode, and to it called Vendors Can Make or Break You. We have to have great vendors. We have to have great partners, and we have to have great employees today. No one person can, one, do everything and know everything that needs to happen on the marketing side, on the sales side, on the operations side, on the development side, on the value add place side. No one person can have all those skill sets. I don't know one. So I had to build a team. I had to develop the skill of building a team. Even passive investors are very much partners in our deals, especially our investors. What I discovered that creates good partnership, now I didn't discover this till after I made the decision to build teams, but what I discovered was what makes a good team is having everyone on that team enrolled in a vision. If you read the book I wrote at the start of the episode one, you'll remember I was talking about building a $60 million storage portfolio. That was my goal at that time. That was my vision. Every investor I talked to was enrolled in that vision and wanted to grow into that vision with me. My partners certainly wanted to be and participate in that vision and contribute to that vision. Even vendors I worked with, I enrolled in that vision. The decision to create teams and have teams enrolled in visions took me and much faster to the goal than I would have otherwise. Then as we began to grow, I realized that I needed systems and structures in place at an operational level. I need great managers, but I need great managers who function within structures and systems. I realized that if I was building a business based on how well a manager runs a facility and that particular manager's gone, then I'm the one that's got to step in and fill the gap. So I saw clearly early on that I need to create a business with systems and structures in place. And that's part of building a great team. I learned what's needed to build systems and structures in place so that people can move from facility to facility, can function within a company and knows what's expected of them, rather than just running a self-storage project. It added value to the company, allowed us to grow faster, and ultimately it's a better environment for employees to work in, for investors to invest in, and it's more fulfilling to run that type of business than it is to run a bunch of facilities. However, it was the decision to build teams and systems that made the difference. And this might sound a little foreign, but I made the decision to move from the competitive plane to the creative plane. What I mean by that is I made the decision to move from a scarcity mindset, although no one will say I have a scarcity mindset, but if you're operating on the competitive plane of life, by definition, I learned that we do. And I made the decision to move from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset, or a possibility mindset. Now, I've written a whole book on it. There'll be a link to it if you're interested, called The Creative Method of Wealth Generation. But it was making the decision early in my career to make that mental shift that I think made all the difference in the world. So in the book, part of the second principle of wealth creation says, moving from the competitive plane where resources are limited to the creative plane of thinking where resources and supply are unlimited. In essence, it means shifting our mindset from scarcity to abundance. So what scarcity looks like, and what I'm on the hunt for all the time, because I made the decision to make that shift, is if I hear myself thinking or saying something like, there's only a limited number of storage opportunities left today, or storage is hard to get into, financing, it's terrible today. If I'm going to come out ahead, I've got to beat the seller down in his price. Money's hard to get. When I hear myself thinking or saying those things, I know I'm in the competitive plane and I'm not in the creative plane. So how does that look on the court, and how did that decision make a difference in creating my business and, let's say, my first $1 million of wealth in the business? When I made that decision, what it forced me to do was to keep my attention on my vision rather than keeping my attention on what appeared to be the problems in front of me. Yes, I had to deal with what comes up on a day-by-day basis, but before I dealt with that, before I ever deal with that, I start every day, even today, with what is the vision I have that I'm creating for my life and for my current business. What's my vision? I'm grounded in that vision. And I do that every morning, every day. I put my attention on my vision. What it looks like on the court of life or in the court of business is we have our attention on our vision and we're just dealing with the circumstances that arise in front of us on a day-by-day basis. But our focus and our attention is on the vision, not the problems. We're just dealing with circumstances. So, for example, when I created the vision in the first part of my career of a $60 million portfolio, when I looked out into my world, what's there is not that, not a $60 million portfolio. Now, the average person quickly will say, well, that positive thinking stuff is nice, but doesn't necessarily really work in real life. Well, your vision better be what's not there right now, or it's not much of a vision. But I developed the muscle to keep my attention on the vision, and every action I was taking was either in business, was either taking me towards that vision or away from that vision. By keeping my attention on the vision, it help direct where I went in the circumstances I was dealing with. It's a skill set that needs to be developed. It's a muscle that needs to be developed, and it takes time. But it starts with a decision. In fact, of all the decisions, this one has been the hardest and most fulfilling for me to grow into as a person. It's still a work in progress, but it was probably the most important of all of them. So I wanted to share with you, and I spent a lot of time thinking about this, putting this episode together, what the decisions were that have made the biggest difference, positive difference, in my self-storage business and in life itself. These were just happened to be the five decisions I made that propelled me to create and realize the first million in wealth from the self-storage business. Your decisions may be different, should be different. Now, nothing I say guarantees success, as you know. The one thing I've learned over my career is that the mindset creates what we do, and what we do creates our results in life. I hope this inspires you and helps you sit down and create, if you haven't already, a vision, like a clear vision for your self-storage business if you haven't already done so. And what are the decisions you need to make today, this year, that will propel you towards that vision? What's worthy of the next year, 5 years, decade of your life? And what decisions do you need to make now? Hope this helps. This is episode 500. You can find out more about the products and services I offer at creatingwealththroughselfstorage.com. And I look forward to hearing about your adventures on your self-storage journey. Thank you very much.